on digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock. Time for the news from Ian Skelly.
The British couple, Paul and Rachel Chandler, who were kidnapped by Somali pirates more than a year ago, have been released. They were handed over to local security officials and are being flown out of the country. The couple from Tunbridge Wells in Kent were abducted on their yacht in October last year while they were sailing towards Tanzania. Their captors had threatened to kill them unless they received a ransom of nearly £4.5 million. The BBC observed the terms of an injunction obtained by the Chandlers' family, which was intended to stop news organisations reporting their release until they were out of Somalia for their own safety. Relatives in the UK say they are overjoyed at the couple's release. Burma's pro-democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi has told the BBC that her first priority is listening to what the Burmese people have to say. In an interview, a day after being released from years of house arrest, she said she wasn't fearful of being detained again, even though she accepted it was a possibility. Earlier, Aung San Suu Kyi told supporters in Rangoon that freedom of speech was the basis of democracy. Services of remembrance are being held to honour those who've died in wars and conflicts during the past century. The Queen has attended the annual ceremony at the Cenotaph in Whitehall. Prince William joined British troops at a service in Camp Bastion in Afghanistan. In Coventry, special ceremonies are taking place throughout the day to commemorate the 70th anniversary of one of the most devastating bombing raids of the Second World War. The authorities in Lebanon have arrested the radical Muslim cleric Omar Bakri days after he was sentenced to life in prison on terrorism charges. Mr. Bakri, who lived in Britain for many years, is said to have been taken from his home in the northern city of Tripoli. The weather forecast, there'll be some rain over southern Scotland this afternoon, but showers in southern parts of England and Wales will clear. Elsewhere, it'll be mainly dry, with a few showers, particularly along the coasts of Wales, northwest England and Northern Ireland. Overnight, most places will be dry, cold and frosty, and after a foggy start in the morning, it'll be mostly dry and bright, but there will be showers in Scotland. And that's the BBC News and the weather. It's now 1:02.
And time for the Early Music Show with Lucy Skeeping.
Welcome to the show. Today, to mark Remembrance Sunday, we're going to hear highlights from a concert given last week at St George's Church, Kemp Town, as part of the 2010 Brighton Early Music Festival. The theme of the concert is Rites of Remembrance, and the soloist is one of the most celebrated names in the early music world, Emma Kirkby. In her long career, of course, Emma has contributed huge amounts to our understanding of early music. Her voice, instantly recognisable, can be heard on literally hundreds of recordings. These days, though, she's also making her mark as a mentor for the next generation of up-and-coming musicians. And as patron of the Brighton Early Music Festival, she appears in this concert alongside one of the newest young orchestras on the scene, the International Baroque Players, whose fresh approach and enthusiasm I hope you'll enjoy as much as I did. And I'll be talking to some of the members later on. It's also nice to see a female conductor on the podium for a change, Deborah Roberts, who as co-artistic director of the festival and director of the chorus we'll hear today, certainly had her hands full. So a rather sombre tone in today's early music show, focusing on the way composers have honoured the dead in biblical stories and in classical mythology. And we begin with a contemporary of Monteverdi, Sigismondo d'India, whose vocal pieces are characterised by that very newest style of the late Renaissance, in which the words were the most important thing, and the music, often full of strange dissonances and harmonic surprises, followed the natural rhythms of speech, all of it making for a much more dramatic and expressive effect than anything that had gone on before. This cantata is based on the story of Tancredi, a Christian knight who meets a mysterious opponent outside the walls of Jerusalem. A battle ensues, and the piece begins after Tancredi has mortally wounded his foe, only to discover to his horror when lifting the visor that it's none other than his beloved Clorinda. So here's Emma Kirkby with the oboe player Jadron Duncan.
Nulla prave, all'alma sì,
Emma Kirkby and the oboe player Jadran Duncan with Amico Hai Vinto by Sigismondo d'India. Our next piece looks at death not in the context of battle, but as a result of lost love. Dido's Lament from Purcell's opera Dido and Aeneas is surely one of the most famous of all the early music repertoire, and it demonstrates just how powerful the composer could be when it came to word setting. He gives us slow, descending lines of melody as the abandoned Dido prepares for her last grieving farewell to the world. Death is now a welcome guest, she sings to her lady-in-waiting Belinda. And then come the first familiar notes of the heart-rending aria, When I Am Laid in Earth. Finally, as Dido slips into unconsciousness, the chorus of Cupids surround her, and with drooping wings they scatter roses on her tomb. Keep here your watch and never part, they sing. Dido's memory must be kept alive.
Thank you.
Dido's Lament, performed by Emma Kirkby with the Brighton Early Music Festival Consort of Voices and the International Baroque Players. We're going to hear the orchestra on their own next, but first, let's find out a bit more about them. They may be a young bunch, but they've got big ambitions. And just a few days before the concert, I popped in on one of their rehearsals for a chat with three founder members. Concertmaster and solo violinist Johannes Pramsholer, violinist Adam Lord, who also acts as the orchestra's manager, and Ailey Cornish, who leads the violas and, as you'll hear, is very much the energetic spokesperson for the band. We got cosy in a teeny dressing room in their tea break and I asked them how they got together.
Well, a couple of years ago, a lot of us were finishing our training, finishing our studying. We've done the schemes that are out there for young players moving into professional work. And really, I think there's a gap between these schemes and the big professional orchestras. That's where we felt that the world could do with an orchestra from our generation, so people can see what we can do.
And Johannes, this orchestra's got a very distinctive character in terms of organisation. You're self-governing. What does that actually mean?
Yeah, that actually means there's no proper management behind us. So we are just us doing everything, from getting the concerts, from organising them, from getting the players in.
Now, one of the important things if you're starting a new orchestra is that it does have a distinctive and recognisable character and sound. If someone listens to one of your CDs or recording, how would they know it was you? What's special?
Yeah, what we're trying in the rehearsals is that each group of the orchestra plays independently and gives their own energy to the thing. So I don't want to be a director who conducts everything and with his ideas. I want every section of the orchestra to be free with their own line so that we inspire each other. And I'm also working on a very direct and intense sound, and I hope that people recognize the orchestra by that.
I know you stand up to play. It certainly does get your vibes sort of across the footlights in a way, doesn't it, to stand up?
I think standing is very liberating because there's only sort of so much freedom of movement you've got when you're sat on a chair. Whereas if you're standing, you can, if you're leading a section, turn around to the rest of your section and encourage them and try and draw something more out of them.
And of course, if you're standing, there's no hiding place in a way, is there on stage?
Absolutely.
You do feel that it's kind of you and the audience, who wherever you are.
Yeah.
We're quite open-minded in our approach to the music, and we like to think that we can reflect that in the people that we reach out to as well. Last year, we performed at the Limelight Night at the 100 Club with Daniel Hope, and we returned again this February, which was fantastic, really, to take what we do into such a different venue. You know, the Rolling Stones have played there, and it really is a proper, well, just a really different venue from what we normally do.
Can't imagine many Baroque orchestras get a chance to do that. But you also, of course, play in more conventional, but larger concert halls, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. We decided when we started to sort of take the bull by the horns and just go straight into booking some extraordinary venues. So we've been lucky enough to play already at the Sheldonian Theatre in Oxford. Wonderful, wonderful venue. And of course, St George's Bristol is another real favourite of ours.
Venue,
fantastic,
isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, and such a lovely audience. They have really great turnout there and just so warm and appreciative. So that was great. And we've just played at St John Smith Square last week. That was our debut there. Hopefully the first of many. We'll have to see, but we did enjoy it.
And of course, in today's programme, we're hearing highlights from your concert at the Brighton Festival. How did that come about?
Well, we invited co-artistic director Claire Norburn to come and hear us, and she luckily enjoyed what she heard. So she went away, had a think about what they could offer us, because we're too big as an ensemble to be taken onto their young artist scheme. They do fantastic work with presenting young artists to the masses in Brighton, but Emma Kirkby was thinking about doing something with them as their patron. And so it seemed that it was an obvious suggestion to say, well, hey, why don't we all come along and play? So, yeah, it's been really good fun.
So for this concert, you were sort of put together with Emma. That must have been so exciting. How did you feel when that kind of came together like that?
It's like the Baroque singer for me in the world, so it's really exciting. And today, meeting her and rehearsing with her, it was just amazing. Thank you. this season, 2010 and 2011, the start of the programming for the season was the fact that we're recording a CD in April. I've put together a program. It's around the Dresden Court with lots of pieces who haven't been recorded before.
Well, the Dresden Court was an incredibly exciting place to be, wasn't it, in the 18th century? Because it was Augustus, wasn't it?
Yes,
I think he was very, very cultured. I imagine the orchestras themselves would have been more servants than you are.
Probably. I suspect, though, they were also very international Baroque players themselves.
They were very international.
Worked quite well for us.
The strings came from Italy, the winds from France. I think they all liked to be there because it was the most amazing place at that time.
So maybe not so different from how the orchestra is now.
Perhaps not. We'll have to wait and see how the CD comes out. But it is exciting. We've found some amazing repertoire. So last week, people who came to hear us were able to hear violin concerti that have never been heard before, as far as we're aware, recently in the UK anyway. We think it might be their first performance in a few hundred years by Heineken and Fasch. So really unknown stuff, and we're just hoping to get it out there because people really love to hear that kind of thing.
After the concerts, they come to us and they say, oh, the Bach was okay, but this other piece, the Fasch,
yes,
it was
exactly.
Amazing.
Tell me about Heineken.
Why don't hear more of that?
And finally, future plans. Obviously, you want to get this orchestra going and do it, I expect, full-time. Is that the aim?
That would be the plan. Yes, we're hoping for world domination, but then doesn't everybody. So we'll have to wait and see how it goes. But absolutely, I mean, we put everything into this. We're all completely involved with it. All the players are totally committed. When you come to see us on stage, everybody that's there is really there because they've chosen to be there. And I think, hopefully, that will be enough to see us through.
Well, thanks very much for talking to me. I'm sure you're going to do very, very well, and good luck to you all.
Thank you.
Members of the International Baroque Players. So let's hear them in music by Locatelli from their Brighton Festival concert. Although there's no singing in this, it is very operatic in style, a concerto based on the story of Ariadne abandoned by Theseus on an island. The violin portrays her mood with dramatic realism, her anguished heartbeat, and then her pleading voice as she longs for death. Il pianto d'Arianna.
Thank you.
Il Pianto d'Arianna by Pietro Antonio Locatelli, performed by the international Baroque players and their director, solo violinist Johannes Pramshola. Well, for our final highlight from this concert, we turn to another 18th century Italian, Pergolesi, who was born 300 years ago this year. It's a cantata setting of that most enduring of legends, Orpheus and his descent into the underworld. Peri, Caccini and, of course, Monteverdi all wrote full-scale operas on the theme. And Pergolesi focuses on just one part of the story, when Orpheus arrives at the gates of the underworld and must use his music to plead with Pluto to rescue his bride Eurydice. Pergolesi's was a short life. He died of tuberculosis aged just 26, and this cantata dates from the last part of his life when he knew he didn't have much longer to live. It's extra poignant, then, to reflect on the second and final recitative and aria that we'll hear, in which Orpheus, in desperation, asks if the hand of fate cannot perhaps be moved, and Eurydice return to him. "Must I sigh and suffer my torments in vain?" he asks the gods. But they don't listen, and Orpheus resigns himself in his final lines. "Death has no terror for me." It could be Pergolesi's epitaph too. So here's Emma Cookby and the International Baroque Players with Pergolesi's Orfeo.
Di traccia il voten. Just me, dear, you know.
Pergolesi's Cantata Orfeo, performed by Emma Kirkby and the International Baroque Players. It was recorded at this year's Brighton Early Music Festival, and it ends the Early Music Show today, which was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced by Rebecca Bean and Barnaby Gordon.
The BBC National Short Story Award 2010.
Short stories in a competition like this, I think, are a fascinating soil sample of actually where we are as a country.
One of this year's judges is the writer Owen Shears.
The stories that for me were most successful, and I suppose this is true of really most pieces of good writing, however dark their subject matter, for me they allowed the story to grow and to reveal some kind of a small victory of the human spirit.
You can hear the five nominated stories this Monday to Friday at 3:30 on BBC Radio 4.
Well, now it's time to discover more of the music you've asked to hear on BBC Radio 3. Radio 3 Requests with Chichi Nwankwo.
Hello. Here's a little salon piece for starters, a wonderful example of charm in music, perfect for this Sunday afternoon. Harry Atterbury in Surrey Keys thinks we deserve to know more about Elgar's smaller works, as they're so enjoyable. Edward Elgar in cheeky and charming mode there with his La Capricieuse. It was played by Marat Bisangaliev on violin and Benjamin Frith on piano. And thanks to Harry Atterbury for making our first Radio 3 request today. So straight on to another composer also called Edward, this time a Norwegian contemporary of Elgar's, Edvard Grieg. Ang Harad Conway in Blackwood was at Radio 3's Vienna Passions concerts in Cardiff and emailed asking for a very beautiful piece of music that sends shivers down her spine. When you hear it, I think you'll agree. Solveig's song is one of Grieg's most moving pieces, particularly, I think, because of its simplicity. It's most famous as an orchestral number from his Peer Gynt suite, but I'm going to play you the composer's vocal version.